phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life. Ooh, go get your butt off of that lazy couch. Put down a laptop and get out of that house. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life.
Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I am your host, Cynthia Fernandez, for the next hour of life experiences and perspectives from the coast on the central coast of California. It's been a busy, busy week in the central coast of California with the Concours d'Elegance all around Pebble Beach, Carmel, Pacific Grove, Carmel Valley. I hope everyone's having a great and safe time. Today's guest, Catherine Gutierrez, has been writing on the peninsula for a long time, first as a journalist, and then finally as a mystery writer, using our local setting of Carmel as her backdrop. She's just had her third book released and is scheduled to do a book signing at the store, Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, next Saturday on August 24th. She'll be there from 1 to 3 for all of you listening today. You're welcome to drop in and have a book signed, have a conversation, and quiz her a little bit. So I want to welcome Catherine.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. It's a pleasure.
It's nice having you. You were mentioning to me that this is your first radio debut.
Yes, it is.
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of fun today. You know, I know you've been writing for a long time. I don't know when you started writing. I do recall that it was for a local paper.
Yes, I started writing for the Carmel Pine Cone in the 90s, and I was fortunate enough to work at the paper at the time when book reviews were done, as well as music and play reviews. Mm-hmm. And so I interviewed many mystery authors, local and nationally known. And I also interviewed and wrote articles on some of the artists who show their work in Carmel.
Mm-hmm. And so you went from journalist to mystery writer. What motivated that switch?
I guess I wear a couple of hats because I've always loved history. I'm a history major from my college days, and I worked as a historic preservation officer in the state of California in Sacramento, and I think one just naturally led to another. As I was trying to hone my writing skills, I was also asked by then Mayor Ken White to serve on the City of Carmel's Historic Preservation Committee, and that inspired me to delve more deeply into the history of our community. And what better way to tell a story laced with history but adding a little mystery to it so as not to put the reader to sleep.
Ah, great strategy. So you're really a history lover and you're disguised as a mystery writer.
I would say so.
Well, that's pretty smart. You know, I was wondering if any of the material, Catherine's first book is titled Murder in the Pines. It is for sale in the bookstore, of course. It's actually one of our best-selling local author mysteries. And I started thinking to myself, Catherine, I wonder if your years of journalism in terms of, you know, what you were writing about happening in the area, I might be laced into the mystery situations of your writing.
Well, in some ways, yes, you could say that, although the books all take place in the 1920s, and I wasn't born during that period. But I did have a wonderful experience with the arts editor, a young woman journalist at the Pine Cone in the 90s by the name of Ivy Weston. And she became a special friend of mine. She was young, unmarried, very career-oriented, very intelligent, and combining knowing her with a woman in the 20s who actually worked at the Pine Cone, who was called the Pine Nut, who did all the social columns, I took the two and merged them together into a different character who has the same kind of spunk and curiosity.
That would be Nora Finnegan.
Correct.
The main character sort of laced throughout all three books.
That's correct.
So we mentioned your first book titled Murder in the Pines. The year after that, I believe you came out with Murder Takes the Stage, which is using the Forest Theater in downtown Carmel as a backdrop. Can you tell us what motivated that little situation?
I think anyone who knows and loves Carmel knows how important the Forest Theater is as a community treasure. It's been there over 100 years, and the only time I believe it was closed for business was during a few of the war years and during World War II. And from the very start, the actors and playwrights and directors, beginning in 1910, made the place come alive in a natural amphitheater that drew people from all over the area. The only problem was that everyone who lived in Carmel at the time, and there were about 600 residents there, permanent residents, everyone was either directing a play, writing a play, doing the costumes, playing the music, and the audiences were very, very small. So I thought, knowing the temperament of theatrical people, what better place to set a mystery than with people who had jealousy, competition, rivalry in their blood. Ego, that's a good one. So it seemed like I could put Nora, having a small part as a maid in one of the plays, right in the driver's seat to uncover the characters who were responsible for a series of mishaps.
We're speaking with Catherine Gutierrez, a local writer, and has just released her third book, Laundryman's Daughter. The Laundryman's Daughter is a little different, you were explaining to me, Catherine.
Yes, this time the year is 1923, and by then, after working at the Pine Cone for 2 years, our young college graduate has advanced and become much more seasoned as a reporter. And in this book, I've highlighted a struggle that developed when there was a coastal laboratory right off Junipero Street in downtown Carmel that was funded by Andrew Carnegie, the famous philanthropist. And he had hired scientists to come out from Columbia University, first to Tucson and then to Carmel in the summers, to study the growth and the climate influences on the Monterey pine. And that laboratory interested me because it is not well known. The building is still there on the outskirts of the village, and the work the scientists did that led to scientific advances in photosynthesis and in many of the environmental issues that we deal with today should have been talked about. And so I inserted their influence on the community, and then gave my heroine a challenge of being dropped with the responsibility of a young Chinese orphan. And what would she do as 23-year-old girl, unmarried, working full-time, if she had the responsibility of watching out for a child whose father had been found dead?
So that is a twist in what your genre had been up until that point.
Yes.
But I gotta say, I bet there's a lot of people listening who can relate to that experience on some level, or they know someone who is dealing with being a single parent.
Correct.
And it strikes me as a maturation process of your main character.
That was my goal, Cynthia. I'm trying to, as all of us have as young people, we've lived our lives and had experiences, and through them we grow and change and become better people, we hope. And we haven't mentioned the love interests in the stories.
Ooh.
There's a slight bit of that. It isn't overwhelming. It's certainly not 50 Shades of Grey. But it is, there in the 20s, there were people who were in love and having marital and non-marital problems. So I've tried to give Nora a little bit of that, too, in each of the books. And people who have read them in order, I think, will appreciate what what she experiences and who she eventually chooses in the third book.
Mm. And so mentioning the order of them, is this a series that really is well ordered? You need to start at number one?
I think they stand by themselves, but what I've done is insert real-life characters with fictional characters. Some of the famous Carmel people, like Herbert Heron and Perry Newberry, and individuals who influenced the growth of Carmel and the way it has remained today, I've put them in the books. But I've also added fictional characters, a sheriff, a policeman, others who come in and out. And I think if you are interested in watching how people change, it's helpful to start at the first book, Murder in the Pines, although I don't think it's absolutely necessary.
Well, very well. We're in studio today with local writer Catherine Gutierrez, and we are discussing all of the murder and goings-on that she's been writing about in her three books. So I wanted to find out from you, Catherine, about kind of the inner journey that this may have taken you on. What is it like as a writer putting together, as you did, history with some fiction to kind of weave a little curiosity for the reader? Does it take you on an inner journey yourself?
I think I've always had a passion for history, and it many times it seems as real to me as today's journey that we're all on. I've often told my husband that if I had to choose, I would pick the 20s as a period, because women had the vote. Women were beginning to have jobs outside the home, although they were limited. And the journey I felt was similar to my own journey as I've grown, married, had a career, and now have the freedom to spend time writing. So I think it has been an inner experience as well.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of writing, I would guess as a writer you're also an avid reader. Is that a misnomer, or is that true?
I read when I don't write. And I've heard authors say, I never read the same genre when I'm writing it, because just so subconsciously I might draw something or borrow something from another writer's book. But I don't think that's the reason why I can't read and write at the same time, because for me, my head is full of the facts and where the plot is going. And in a mystery, you have to satisfy your readers that there is a genuine series of events at the end of a book that justifies who did the wrong thing, and were they caught up in it, and were they punished. And so you have to, your plots are structured in such a way that while you drop clues along the way, if you don't satisfy the person who spends the hours reading what you've written by giving them a sense that right was kept right and wrong was identified and people were held to it, then they're not going to read your next book.
Well, I appreciate that you do that. There have been at least movies that I've watched, and at the end of the movie, I'm like, was that over?
Right.
We're going to continue with Catherine Gutierrez, local writer and author, in just a minute. Please stay with us. This is Simple Life on Radio Monterey, 540 AM. And we're back in studio. This is Cynthia Fernandez, your host, on this hour of Simple Life. You know, the idea for this show is actually born from the love of storytelling and the desire to just create a deeper connection between all living things, one person at a time. And I'm here with Catherine Gutierrez, a local author and writer, and we're talking about her three novels, which are on sale at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore, as well as some of the perspectives that Catherine holds herself. Now, Catherine, before the break, you mentioned that you were a historian for a number of years. It's a passion of yours. And that is sort of the reason that these novels emerged, as a way to educate people about the history of the area and make it interesting for them to learn different aspects. Have you been a local a long time?
My husband and I have lived in and out of Carmel. We also have a house in Capitola, so We both enjoy both communities, and we have been coming to Carmel since the 80s as visitors, as many people do, and then looking to see what it would be like to settle here among what I consider the most beautiful pines and coastline, and they certainly aren't hard to pass up. And I think now we've purchased a small home here from the 50s. It isn't a historic cottage, but it's downsizing, as many older people do. And I hope to be able to continue to write there in Carmel. And we would like to keep our, we belong to several of the organizations, the Residents Association, Yes for Carmel, the Carmel Women's Club, and I do. And I enjoy that participation. I've always been a volunteer most of my life.
Very nice. And as a person who's been in around this area since the 80s, and a historian as well about the area, have you seen a lot of changes, I wonder, that have come through our way?
Well, let's just dismiss the first one, which is traffic. I think all of us have seen changes there, even 40 miles from here on the way to and from Capitola when we've traveled over there. I have to say that I first became acquainted with the strong residential spirit in the city of Carmel through a very strong woman friend who became very close to me. Her name was Helen Arnold, and she was on the city council of Carmel during the Clint Eastwood years and spoke up for environmental issues and was not anti-development by any means, but I think was a strong voice for keeping Carmel residential. And through her, I was able to observe just the changes that develop in the city. What I really value in Carmel is the way, and this is true in Pacific Grove and Monterey as well, the way the communities don't tend to just mow everything down at the drop of a hat because someone has a new idea, but I think they recognize that their downtown villages do attract tourists and people who are hearkening back to a time when things were a little less complicated, perhaps. Life was a simpler time. And those shops and people who work in them and greet the visitors and the hotels, those are very, very important resources to a community. And I think Carmel, through its planning process and its leadership in the 30 years I've been coming here, I see an interest in keeping the good things and yet being willing to try new things. And I think those are good values that most people could support.
Yes, I agree with you. Really, that was what drew me to Carmel myself, is just the focus of natural beauty. You know, I love that there are no streetlights and we can see the stars at night. It sounds simple, but that is a true pleasure. And also, people that I order things from and have them shipped to the store, they don't understand how there cannot be numbers on the buildings in Carmel.
Try to get someone to put your TV in and find your house.
Yeah, it's amazing. And yet we have FedEx and UPS in front of the store every single day. So it just holds a little space for an alternative way of being, and I'm a big advocate for that.
And to me, that's what attracted me to write about this city in the first place, because the lack of streetlights, the lack of neon, the lack of mail delivery, the simpler appreciation for a beach without a large commercial hotel dominating it so that the residents can walk there and appreciate nature, those values are strongly protected, and as they should be.
Now, you mentioned a developer on the beach. Didn't that come up as a situation in your first book?
It did. There really was a group of individuals from the East Coast who, in the 20s, came to the city and asked, at the time the city council was called the Board of Trustees, And they asked the board if they would give them permission to develop the area north of Ocean where the dunes are to put a very large hotel. That was reported in the Pinecone. And, of course, it was shot down. But it struck me as something that would be good to remind people of as to why, for example, Capitola and Santa Cruz are beach towns with boardwalks and shops and restaurants right on the beach and even hotels. So I think Carmel was very unique in protecting itself. It incorporated early in 1916, and it, from that point on, has tried to have a life that the people who come there to either stay for a few days or live their lives out will feel comfortable and safe.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women have told me that Carmel is their destination point. They love the shops. They love the bookstore. They really feel that they're safe and they can come for a weekend with the gals. And it's just a nice respite for them.
Yeah, I've heard that from people as well. And actually, there's as an example, a group of five guys who must have known each other either in work or in college, but they now live all over the nation. And 1 week a year, they come to Carmel to vacation together, play a little golf, do a little shopping. We always see them in the bookstore. So, yeah, it's a very unique place.
Mm-hmm.
Want to give a shout out to all those people now shopping at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden. And if you are interested in seeing Catherine Gutierrez's books, I'm sure Paul or Doreen would be happy to show you. So just a question for you about how important is reading and writing to you? I mean, in terms of literature, how do you feel about our educational system right now and the focus that is or is not really placed on that?
I taught school. I taught English and social studies in the junior high. And also I taught in the fourth grade classes in San Francisco for several years. And to me, that would have been in the 60s. I felt the education system really made a great effort to deal with problems that the students had, but it wasn't so much the curriculum or the, I think a small class is beneficial, although not essential if the teacher is competent. But I wonder today, with all the distractions, I think teachers now have a very difficult time in the sense that they're frightened of doing anything that might be considered harassment.
Mm.
They have discipline problems. What do you do to solve that so that the other children can learn? I think it's a hard time to be a teacher, and I hope that some of the efforts that are coming, I believe in local control of schools personally.
Mm.
And I think in my books, I've put an emphasis on the Sunset School, which started in 1906 in Carmel. And I think that brought, that school did a lot for the students. They only went to eight grades there and then went off to high school in Monterey or Pacific Grove. But I think they gained a good education. And there were only two rooms and there were children, you know, it together right on top of each other. But I'm sure the teachers made sure that they learned what was necessary. I think teachers have a much harder row to hoe right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a great library system here in Monterey County. Monterey County Main Library, I know, is very well managed and very well stocked with options for their visitors. And then in Carmel, downtown Carmel, we have a children's library and a main library. We're very, very lucky to have that service available.
And we also have, if children are so inclined, we have in the children's branch a local history room that's open every afternoon but Mondays, so Tuesday through Friday. And the research librarian, Ashley Wright, is a young woman, very competent. And so you have that resource there that has all the Carmel pine cones on stock and a lot of books that have been written over the years. They're artifacts. One could see the the creations of one of the famous doll makers in Carmel. Mayotta Brown's creation is in a little plexiglass exhibit case there. So I think it draws a lot of interest from not only adults, but I think children too.
Mm-hmm. So, Catherine, what do you like in a book when you're reading a book? Do you have any favorite authors or favorite kinds of storylines?
Well, I grew up in Riverside, California, and I took the bus in from our home, which is 10 miles out of town, walked a mile to the school, and on my way home back to the bus station every day, I always stopped in at the children's library in Riverside. And my favorite place to settle was in the fantasy, myths, legends, the stories that gave me as a young person an ability to go out of myself and into a period of time allowed you to realize who you might be and how you would accept challenges that the characters faced. And so from those early books, I gravitated to the Nancy Drew books. My dad always made sure I had the money to buy a new one. And we had always had books in the home. We had a very small black and white TV that was hardly used. And so my mother was the one who really drove the idea that through reading you can improve yourself and learn to be a better person. So from Nancy Drew and Agatha Christie and through all the mystery writers, I've tried to balance my reading with literature. I like Ann Patchett. I like P.D. James. I like a story that has something from the very beginning, from the first line, the hook, that draws the reader in and helps you set the stage for what's to come. And I appreciate a book that is in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. I don't enjoy as much a book that goes back and forth, present, past. I like third person. If I see a book that's in the present tense, I sort of react to it. I guess that's just me, but I do feel that anyone who spends the time that it takes, man or woman, to sit down and try to put together a story, I really admire that and feel that they should be applauded.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like an archaeologist in a way. You're unearthing something and trying to put the pieces together in a puzzle.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you see the movie Cloud Atlas or read the book?
I have it on my Netflix list, but I haven't seen that or read the book or any of that.
Well, that flashed in my mind because Cloud Atlas, which I think was a fabulous movie, based on a book, of course, switched back not only between periods, but it utilizes the idea of reincarnation. So you're seeing one soul, if you will, travel through different lifetimes and different genders. And so it's very
provocative.
and complex. And I literally had to see the movie again.
Well, I would too, but I might try that, Cynthia. That does sound like a fascinating approach.
It was a fabulous movie. I mean, it starts way back in history and then goes up in history, I guess, or I should say our future, maybe 100, 200 years. So it was really fascinating.
Good.
Yeah. So I want to find out more about your practices as a writer, but we're going to hold that until the next break is over. All of those listening to us right now, thank you for listening to Simple Life Radio here at KRXA 540 AM. Please stay with us. We'll be back with Catherine Gutierrez, local writer and author of three books now, published and available for sale at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore. Stay with us. And we're back in studio with Catherine Gutierrez, local writer and author of three books now. Catherine, I can't believe it's three books. It's been an amazing journey so far, and you've just alluded to another book following. Is that true?
Well, there's always another book in the mind. Whether the spirit is able to put it all together is another thing. I have an idea for a book that will deal with the same characters in the first three. I think it will probably move the story up a couple of years. At one point in time, the editor and publisher of the Carmel Pinecone retired in reality. And in my fictional story, I have the editor in that same boat, about ready to retire or sell the paper.
Wow. So you've got real life history, once again, weaving in through your novel. And I understand that book three brings up some pretty serious issues. You want to share what those are?
Well, as the reader begins the story, he or she will see that Nora has been put into a rather difficult position. She has befriended the Chinese laundryman who runs the hand laundry in the village, and she seems to be his only friend. He doesn't speak a lot of English. He's very solitary. And when he has a crisis in his life, he turns to her to help him out. And through that experience, Nora is given the care of a small 7-year-old girl who has just arrived in Carmel from the Chinese rescue mission in San Francisco, where she and her mother have lived. And the mother is ill, and the laundryman is in the position of taking his daughter on while he's been in Carmel saving money to try to bring the family together. And Nora then accepts the responsibility of this child's care, albeit temporary. And through the story's chapters, she encounters people who don't think it's right for a Caucasian woman to house an Oriental child. She has threatening phone calls. She is advised by those who care about her to think twice before she continues along, and whether she's ready to take on so much responsibility. And in many communities, not just Carmel or Monterey or PG, but in many communities during this time, there were deeds written so that one could not sell or rent a house to an Asian, African American, or anyone of a different race. I obviously that isn't going on now, but I think we need to be reminded of that as we all try to make our way and learn to adapt and accept people for their what they are and who they are. And I thought this would be a good reminder.
Very good reminder. Yeah, racial issues. Yeah, just very, I have to say that when racial issues come up, I think that people just don't understand how we really are so much the same. Cultures could be different. Certainly, appearances could be different. Language can be different. But we all bleed the same color. And we all require love and family and home on earth. So I applaud you for taking that on in the book. And even though it's a fictional situation, I know that Carmel has had some history with racial issues, Native American issues that are tied into the Carmel Mission.
Yes.
And the graveyard that still exists outside the Carmel Mission, filled with Native people in unmarked graves, is part of our history. And I'm not sure if Carmel, the city of Carmel, has the same sort of connection to Chinese immigrants as Pacific Grove does. But every year there is a Festival of Lanterns that I believe is loosely intended to be a memorial or a respectful honoring of the people who literally physically labored to build the town.
And in my third book, I try to address the issue that there was a terrible fire in PG, and also a time when people in PG were trying to deal with other issues such as drugs that were being sold illegally and by Chinese. And so I don't think it's easy to make an assumption or a judgment, but I think bringing the points out, let people look at it and see what they think about it and what they decide.
And as you mentioned early on, it's a safe way to kind of look at the past and mull it over and be entertained by it, but still have it kind of enter into your consciousness as you said, you know, what would I do if I were in that situation?
That's right.
Yeah. So as a writer, we have a lot of artists in this area. I mean, Carmel was founded on artists and scholars. It was known as a bohemian village. I meet a lot of people through the bookstore that are interested in writing their memoirs or their book, and they're looking for insight into how to do that. You know, it's a job. I've heard people say it's a job. I have to set aside a certain amount of time every day. I have to be organized. And so my question to you, Catherine, is how did you take this on? What was your practice as a writer?
It's easier when you're writing for a paper because there's a deadline.
Ah.
And that motivates one very well. If you know that you better get that in on a certain date or it won't even be in the paper. Writing a book or a memoir or a travel story or even a short story of any kind all take a lot of dedication. And for me, I'm a morning person. I tend to get up in the morning, take a walk, have breakfast, and then try to answer a few emails and then get right to work. And I usually write up until lunchtime and then some in the afternoon. At night, I give up. But I think for people who are serious, they should set a schedule that works for them. And also, it doesn't hurt to check through your local bookstores or online and try to find classes, courses that might be given that would help you get motivated and have the tools that would help you tell your story.
Now, I know there have been some of those classes that you described offered by Henry Miller Library in Big Sur, and I've seen them offered also through the Capitola Book Cafe.
Correct.
In Capitola.
Yes.
Is there anything that you're aware of that's offered through Monterey Peninsula College?
I've taken a course in the summer there from Kent Seavey, the local historic preservationist, and an architect by the name of Richard Janik, and those have been more courses on history. So I haven't really taken I did take a course up at Book Passage in Marin County in Corte Madera. They have a tremendous catalog of courses in language, writing, poetry. And if you go online and look up Book Passage, I'm sure you would find any kind of course. But at Monterey Peninsula, I don't have much experience.
Got it. Well, anyone listening who is interested, I'm sure online you could get a list of their courses. I believe their next semester starts the 26th of the month and continues on. So take a look at what they offer. It is nice to have a local junior college here. And Catherine, you know, we have the three books that we mentioned. Murder in the Pines was your first book that published in 2011. And Murder Takes the Stage, focused around the Forest Theater in Carmel, came out, I believe, the year after. And then The Laundryman's Daughter, of course. You're going to be at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore for a book signing a week from today.
Yes, from 1 to 3.
1 to 3 on August 24th. But you are also scheduled at other places in the area. Why don't you let our listeners know where you'll be and when?
The following day, on Sunday afternoon, I'll be giving a book talk with a fellow mystery writer from Capitola by the name of Gail Ortiz. She is the owner of Gail's Bakery, and besides being a great baker, she is also a mystery writer. And she and a group of women in my old book group were responsible for a couple of novels that took place in Capitola during the contemporary times. And so Gail and I have like a little dog and pony show where she questions me as you are, Cynthia, and we discuss writing and books. So if anyone is interested, it's at 3 o'clock at Riverhouse Books in the Carmel Crossroads, Sunday the 25th. And I don't think there's anything else in this area past next Sunday.
Mm-hmm. But will you be up north in Capitola?
I just did a book signing there last Tuesday, so we're all set on that one.
Got it. And, you know, I was on the way to the station today, and I was listening, of course, to an interview with an author online or on my radio, and I wondered if you had ever, in your dealings with these three books now that are published, had you ever come across an idea you were really excited about and end up later having to scrap the idea?
Well, that would be interesting. Probably when you get too close to real people. I do like to put real people. I have the California architect Julia Morgan in all three books.
Hmm.
She was the first woman California writer architect. So I do like to do that, but I don't really want to have any real life person do anything or say anything that would be counter to their own personalities or that might offend their family members. So there have been quite a few stories I've come across that won't see the light of day in my books because I don't want to get anyone in trouble.
Uh-huh.
So,
sort
yes.
of the National Enquirer version.
Exactly.
And what would you say the biggest challenge is for you in terms of your writing? What has sort of been an obstacle to deal with?
I think writing, if you have a goal to produce something that is yours in a specific period of time, and then life intrudes, you have family issues, vacations to take, or somewhere that you need to be, you have a responsibility to others, those all affect getting a book out. So those obstacles of just having enough time in life to handle what comes up, that's been difficult. But I'm very fortunate. I have a husband of 33 years who is constantly supportive and would do anything he could for me to support my work. That means a whole lot to an individual.
That's a wonderful gift.
Yes, it's a gift. And I think I have more benefits than obstacles.
Very nice to hear. I like to ask our guests what their favorite book of all time is. And if I were to ask you that, Catherine, what would you say?
Well, I would say Elizabeth Gouge, who was an English writer in the 1970s. I have collected all of her novels. She's written over 30-some books that are set in the English countryside, many of them take place in the 40s and 50s. She was a single woman. Her father was a warden, I think he was called, I'm not sure, at a church in England. And Elizabeth Gouge writes about the village, the people, the children. I'm particularly interested in her views on children. And her books don't carry on. They're each standalones. My favorite book, The Scent of Water, deals with a woman in her 50s who retires to a small village and inherits the home of her favorite aunt.
Hmm.
And two little children live next door and make her life interesting. And I think she's probably inspired me more than I can remember, but I love Elizabeth Gouge.
Nice. And what are you reading now?
I haven't started a new book lately, but I have checked out two from the Carmel Library. One is the Transatlantic, the new
oh, yes.
book,
uh-huh.
which I'm very interested in. I saw the individual who wrote it on Charlie Rose one afternoon. And the book I have top to read is The Hour of Peril, which is the story of Abraham Lincoln's journey from Springfield, Illinois, to Washington for his inauguration. And in the book, he is protected by Alan Pinkerton of the Pinkerton Detective Agency fame. And there's a germ in that book that will, I hope, come into my next book.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So are you by chance going to move into politics?
No, thank you.
No politics. Oh, I think that would be so juicy.
Well, it might be for you, Cynthia, but
Yes,
it would mean no more writing because my husband was in politics.
I didn't know
that. He was
that.
On the Capitola City Council and the mayor of Capitola. And I know from personal experience how much work he put into that. And that's real volunteerism to help your community.
That's true. And it's very controversial because no matter what you do, there's going to be a number of people you're not able to please.
Always.
And there's also so much that people behind the scenes understand that those in the community may not have privy to. And so misunderstandings come about. It gets very tense.
I think the answer to a politician's dilemma is to be true to themselves.
Very well put. So if you would like to have Catherine's three books, or any number of them, Murder in the Pines, Murder Takes the Stage, or The Laundryman's Daughter, we do carry them prominently at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden in downtown Carmel. We're located on Dolores between 5th and 6th. You can give us a call at 831-624-4955. And she, Catherine Gutierrez, will be on site a week from today on August 24th on Saturday afternoon from 1 to 3. And we're looking forward to having you there.
I'm excited about it. You're one of my favorite bookstores, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you too today. I think I'll try it again sometime now.
Yay!
That I've gone through this little bit of fire.
Well, it's just like having a conversation, only people are listening. So the other event I want to mention for Pilgrim's Way is at Caraccioli Cellars, located on Dolores, on the other side of Ocean, between Ocean and 7th. And on August 29th, that's a Thursday evening, we are collaborating with them to host their once-a-month local author night. The author Paula Bertoin wrote collectively with other community members locally here, Passion for Place. It's a beautiful book filled with writings and poetry and art and photographs of the area all around Carmel. So if that at all interests you and you'd like to know more, you can check out our events on our website, which is located at www.pilgrimsway.com. Just click on events, or if you are a Facebook user, we do have a Facebook page. It would be Facebook/Pilgrim's Way, and also click on events there. There's a number of things coming later in the month, but I hear my favorite music starting, so I am going to wait till next week when I see you all again. Thank you so much, Catherine, for having this be a pleasurable experience. I really appreciate your coming.
Thank you, Cynthia.
All right. We'll be here next week, Simple Life, at Radio Monterey, 540 AM. Zabba-dab, 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 zabba-dab.